Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to continue what we've been saying about betrayal. We'd like to finish some of the things that we did not get the chance to go through in the previous recording. And we'd also like to share on some additional stories and things that have happened in the news that are related to this topic. So it is as if the truth continues to emphasize the issue of betrayal or treachery, and how it relates very specifically to America. So we'll do that, given that that's what's still being said in the atmosphere. We'd like to first of all go through some stories that recent stories that from this past week that seem to confirm or reaffirm the theme of Tennessee and Ohio being the states that represent betrayal and treachery in America. So first of all, let's go to a story on thegatewaypundit.com. So this story was posted on the 23rd of December 2023. So it was the same, it was 1 week ago from this recording, and it was the day that the previous recording was posted on. So as we were recording and posting that the previous snippet, this story came out as if to ratify or reaffirm the connection between Ohio, Tennessee, and betrayal. And the story here reads, it's from thegatewaypundit.com, and it says, illegal alien sentenced to 19 years in prison for raping special needs woman in Ohio after being deported 5 times. There's a mugshot of him, and he's gross, so I'm not going to describe him too much. It says in the story, when you read the name, you're puzzled because it doesn't match the face. And that would not be the issue so much if by that we meant that the name is different from what you would expect to see in the face. It's not just the external features of the face, it's what's behind the face that doesn't match the name at all. So the name that is said right at the top is German Matthews. German as in, you know, Germany. German Matthews, 40, had been deported 5 times from the United States. But then they say Breitbart News reports, and then they quote from Breitbart News, and it says, last April, 40-year-old illegal alien German Matthews, who also went by the name Hernan Mateos, or if you kind of pronounce it, the H in Spanish is silent, so it would be Hernan Mateos of Nicaragua, approached the woman while she walked across a gas station parking lot. Prosecutors said Matthews prepared for the violent assault by putting his hoodie over his head. Matthews grabbed the woman, who has special needs, and pushed her down a hill into a wooded area before violently raping her while beating her face. Forest Park Police Sergeant Jackie Dreyer told prosecutors that the woman's face was beaten so badly that Matthews' hands were covered in the victim's blood. A witness to the attack called the police, and when they arrived, he was still on top of her. Eventually, he attempted to flee the scene. Matthews, I don't know why they're calling him Matthews. His name is Mateos. And by the way, what happens, that name German is really more like Herman. And what happens is in Spanish, the G, just like the H is silent in Spanish, the G sounds like the English H. It has that H sound. So I think that what happened was this guy tried to anglicize his name, and he changed Hernan to Herman. And I guess his friends called him Herman. His Hispanic rat friends call him Herman. But if you say it in English or look at the name in English, it just says German. So a person who's not, and by the way, I am aware of people from Latin America who give the, who have a name, and in fact, I actually knew one person one time who had a name, the first name Herman, but it was, and I'm not, I don't remember how he spelled, I think he spelled it with a G as well, but his given name in Latin America was Herman, and that's how they pronounced it, but it was spelled with a G, if I remember correctly, but it looks like German, like the word German in English. So I've seen this name before, in Spanish. It's not very common, but if every now and then someone in Latin America is given that name, mostly in South America, because this person that I knew was from South America, so from the northern part of South America, shall we say. So the thing is that so what he did is he anglicized his name, and Mateos is Mateo. Without the S, it's Matthew. It's the same thing as Matthew in English. It's the Spanish form of Matthew. So Mateos, if you translate it as a name in English, becomes Matthews. So that's how he got that name, and he gave himself that name. So I don't know why they keep calling him Matthews. He's not a Matthews. He's a Mateos. But Matthews claimed that he was, quote, possessed by a demon, unquote, at the time of the attack. Quote, he's an animalistic predator whose actions are beyond words, unquote, Dreyer said. Dreyer, the police sergeant from Forest Park in Ohio. So, and then Dreyer added that it was one of the worst crimes she had seen in her 20-year law enforcement career. So, and that's the end of the story. So, this is relevant for several reasons. It's as if the truth is trying to say what a traitor looks like and what a traitor does, like certain qualities. We saw last time, for example, that there was a connection between treachery and dogs, like that Siberian husky or whatever that was stealing packages, you know, being playful with the delivery guy while he was there, leaving the package. And then the moment he got on the truck to leave, then the dog went and stole the package. And that speaks of the quality of someone who wants to please others, who's like a dog trying to please others, but who has another agenda in mind. And that's one quality that leads people into the road of betrayal, having that constant desire to be pleasing others. That's why they can't stay committed to a principle, because they know that by staying true to a principle, they will alienate a lot of people that disagree with that principle, especially as if it's a principle that requires a lot of conviction, because it's true, but it's rejected by most people. So they start trying to please people, and that's how they slowly swerve from their principles. But on the surface, they continue to make the declaration that they believe in the principle. But in their hearts, they are already doing deals, the art of the deal with different people to basically sell themselves to get approval. But then to the people that knew them from the beginning, they continue claiming that they believe this core principle when they really don't anymore, because they've been selling out slowly in their soul, in their inner being. They've been selling their soul to the people that they want to please. So they end up looking like one thing when they have slowly become another. And as I'm saying this, I keep thinking of Paul Ryan, the politician here in America. I think he was from Wyoming, if I remember correctly. He was this, I think he was the Speaker of the House. He's now so relevant in my thinking, so irrelevant that I don't even remember much about him, only that he was the vice presidential candidate with the Mormon Romney, Mitt Romney, in 2012, the presidential ticket that should have won by a landslide, given how the country was back in 2012. But Romney played such a cautious campaign because he didn't want to look like a racist running against a bastard that he lost. But I still think that he might have actually won. And that fraud was committed in 2012 already in a couple of strategic states, and that made the difference. But it shouldn't have had to be that close. That's what I mean. So that's the last major kind of highlight that I have of Paul Ryan in my head, that he was the vice presidential candidate. And he had a lot of potential. He could have been a great president. He was destined to be president of the United States and be a great one if he had stayed on the path of truth. But he chose not to. He started selling out very slowly, and now he's just an out and out traitor. And Ryan, that's a very Irish sounding name, or Celtic sounding name. So. Not a coincidence there, because we've been talking about Ireland also in the context of betrayal. But the thing is that one of the qualities then we saw is the dog quality. You start wanting to please people, so you sell out your principles. And then what happens is you start using the dog technique with the people that you're betraying, the people to whom you claim to still believe in your core principle, because you start acting like a dog towards the people outside that you want to please, and then it just becomes a part of you, and you become like a dog trying to please the people that originally agreed with you, but now you're doing it you're not kind of like buying your soul back. Shall we say, to reaffirm your belief in your core principle. It's not that anymore, because you already are out of that, because you've been trying to please the people on the outside. Then the people on the inside, shall we say, with them, you don't want to lose them, because they have been supporting you. So you start saying the things that you know will please them. But you're just saying them. But your heart has already been sold to the people on the outside. So that's kind of a quality of the traitor that I think the truth is trying to expose. And another quality that, by the way, that we wanted to clarify before going into all these stories, has to do with identity change, or name change, interestingly enough. And it has to do with what we said before about James Joyce. If you recall in the previous recording, we talked about James Joyce and this plaque in France, where there was this controversy because the plaque referred to James Joyce, the famous Irish writer, as a British écrivain, which is like a fancy word in French to mean a writer slash artist. That's the feeling I get from that word. It's not just a writer, it's a writer slash artist. So he was a the plaque said, here's where James Joyce lived in Paris for a while. He was the British écrivain who of Irish descent. So, and the Irish people are were offended because he was referred to as a British écrivain of Irish descent instead of just saying the Irish writer. But the thing is, as we said before, is that it really is not that controversial if you see it from the outside, because from the outside of Britain, of England, or the UK, because from the outside, from outside the UK, in most of the world, the UK, Great Britain, and England, to a certain extent, are all synonyms. It's all the same thing. So I would dare say that most people around the world who are not living in a former British colony or a Commonwealth, British Commonwealth nation, would have a hard time distinguishing between between the UK and England. I think most people around the world are not aware that the UK is four constituent countries: England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. They just think of it as England, and they all speak English, so it's just like England. But sometimes they another synonym for the country is Great Britain or United Kingdom, and I think United Kingdom is much less commonly used out in the world, in the non-English speaking world, I would dare say. It's almost always England or Great Britain. And in the time when that plaque was written, I think, and in the times when James Joyce lived in Paris, Ireland was still kind of united to Great Britain. And I know that technically, for example, the name of the kings in the UK are King So-and-so of King of Great Britain and Ireland. So so within the UK or within the British Isles, there's a sort of distinction between Great Britain and Ireland, even when Ireland was part of Great Britain. But to the outside world, Great Britain is Great Britain. It's not there is no Northern Ireland, there's no Wales, and there was no Ireland by itself, just like there's no Northern Ireland by itself to a viewer for, who is outside the UK from a non-English speaking country. So what I'm trying to say is that to an outsider from not in the UK, in a non-English speaking country like France, it doesn't seem like an incorrect statement at all to say that James Joyce was a British writer slash artist of Irish descent, because especially if you say it in French, the way it was written in the plaque, Britannique, so it's Britannical, shall we say, if we do like a brute force translation of that word. He is a Britannical writer of Irish descent. That's what the plaque was saying, and when you see it like that, it makes even more sense, because I could be wrong on this, but I think Ireland is a British Isle. So when you think of the British Isles, I think you think of the big island that includes England, Wales, and Scotland, and then there's the smaller island, and Ireland is in it. So I could be wrong, but I think technically Ireland is in the British Isles. So what the point that I'm trying to make is, and I think that's what the truth was saying, and I wasn't quite catching it until after the recording, and I started thinking about it and started making more sense, that when there's a traitor in a group, to the outside, he has the same name tag as everybody else in the group. So if you're an outsider that does not know the intricacies of the group, that the trader is in, the trader looks like he is part of the group and has the same name tag as everybody else. That's why James Joyce had the name tag of British to the French. And that's because he, in that context, in that story, represents Ireland and betrayal. I don't know if James Joyce was a traitor in his heart. I don't know. But I'm not saying also that every Irish person is a traitor or every person of Irish descent is a traitor. That's not it at all. I'm talking about the general tendencies. And you can buck the trend and be different from the general tendencies, even if you're Irish or of Irish descent or whatever. It's always, at the end of the day, a decision that you make in your heart, and individually. But in this story, in this context, James Joyce represents Ireland in the context of treachery or betrayal, and this James Joyce, to the outside world, outside of the UK or in Ireland, looked like a British person, just like everybody else. But the thing is, to the person who knows the group more intimately and who delves into the nature of the group, who understands the group more profoundly, to that person, the treachery of the difference of the traitor will be more evident. So that's what I'm trying to say. That if you're not familiar with the group, the traitor will blend in and have the same name tag. It you have to go into the group and understand the intricacies of the group and what the group stands for, and that's when you start seeing the differences. Oh, he's not really that British. He's more Irish. He has a different name tag on the inside if you start looking deep into his heart and into the dynamics of the group and into the core values of the group, if I'm making any sense. So the traitor to the outside has the same name tag as everybody else in the group. But when you're inside the group and understand the nature of the group and the principles that the group supposedly stands for, then suddenly the distinction begins to be clear. And that's kind of like what happens, for example, in the Republican Party, with the people who are very conservative. The Republican Party is supposed to be the equivalent of the, quote, conservative party in America. And if you know, to the outside world, if you're a Republican, you're a Republican, and they're all the same. But if you're a Republican or a conservative, and you are inside the world of the Republican Party, shall we say, then the people who are not really conservative, who claim to have Republican principles, but do not, these people become more obvious to you. And that's where the name Rhino came from. I think it was a phrase or an acronym coined by Rush Limbaugh. I could be wrong, but I think he was the one who started coining that. Rush Limbaugh, a conservative radio writer who passed away not too long ago here in America. Rhino is an acronym for Republican in name only. So it's people who have the name tag of Republican, but those who are inside the Republican movement or party or whatever recognize, oh, he really has a different name tag. He's Irish. He is part of the Kingdom of Great Britain, but he's really Irish, if you see what I'm trying to say. And that's just like another quality to look for in treachery. So interestingly enough, this man or this animal, Hispanic animal, he also had this name tag change. He gave himself a name tag that was looked American or anglicized, German Matthews. So you look at it in writing and you don't know who he is or how he is on the inside. And you would think, oh, he's an American, a person of English leanings, shall we say. And by English, I mean the culture, the Anglo culture. But when you delve into him, and when you know the particulars of America and the Anglo culture, you realize, no, he's not a German Matthews. He's a Hernan Mateos. So there's always this name change. And I know this sounds like a very simple principle, just there's a name tag change because the trader pretends to be something, has one name tag, but really has something else on in his heart. But the point is that the difference between his name tag, his outer name tag, and his inner real name tag is hard to distinguish from the outside. That's what we're trying to say. You have to kind of be acquainted with the principles in the group and be committed to the principles of the group, or understand what that commitment means to see the difference between the name tags. I hope I'm making sense. But so that's the second quality. And the thing is that this guy was deported 5 times. So you can see there also that this poor woman that was raped by this son of a bitch, a bastard animal who will burn in hell, this woman was betrayed by the system. This man was deported 5 times, and he's been led back in. He always makes his way back into the border, back through the border and into the country. And I think that's another aspect of these traitors. I believe that the truth is wanting to point out that sometimes they are exposed, they are kind of let out, and somehow they find their way back into the group. Like all these rhinos, like Paul Ryan and others who have been called out for their betrayal and hypocrisy, but somehow they always make their way back in. They stay in the group somehow. It's like they are unofficially kicked out of the group, and somehow they make it back into the Republican Party, and they're still Republicans. So there's this constant quality of being called out, but then somehow they make it back into the group, so that's kind of what we want to say. And it happened in Ohio. This man attacked her. I'm sure that it was from behind. It doesn't say here, but it is that act of betrayal against another human being. So, and I know it's not a coincidence that this story came out and featuring Ohio again. So another story we wanted to mention again from the gatewaypundit.com that was posted 2 days later on the 25th of December, 2023. It says, former Tennessee official and spouse plead guilty to illegally producing and selling hundreds of driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. Tennessee and Ohio. I'm going to read part of this story here. It says, a Knoxville couple admitted to conspiring to create illegal identification documents. Cheryl Huff, 49, and, interesting name, and Mario Paz Mejia. Paz, P-A-Z, Mejia is M-E-J-I-A. And I'm pronouncing the J as, it also has an H sound in Spanish. The G has an H sound with the vowels E, I, and, E and I. And has a hard G sound with A, O, and U. But the J in Spanish sounds like an H in English. So Mejia, as if there was an H there, Mejia. That's the name of the guy. Mario Path Mejia, 50 years old. Entered guilty pleas in the federal court on Thursday for their roles in a scheme to produce hundreds of Tennessee driver's licenses and identification cards. So that's and that goes to that idea of the name tag change, that the traders create a false identity. They and it's an identity that's difficult to discern from the outside. You have to kind of look closely, and then you see that it's not really the same name tag. It's something else. And it's another group inside a larger group. So it's interesting. Cheryl Huff, I would dare say, is an Anglo-Saxon American in Tennessee. And she was colluding with this guy who is clearly of Hispanic descent and Hispanic in his heart, Mario Paz Mejia. She was colluding with this Hispanic bastard to produce all these licenses, illegal false licenses and ID cards to help illegals to work in America. So so you would tell it's just a Hispanic who infiltrated Tennessee. No, it's a Hispanic with an American woman named Cheryl Huff. And that again shows the treachery in Tennessee. Pathmahia also assisted his customers in obtaining false citizenship and residency documents, two requirements to obtain a Tennessee driver's license, including fraudulent lease agreements to establish proof of Tennessee residency and false birth certificates, social security cards, and driver's licenses from other states and U.S. territories to establish proof of citizenship or legal residency in the United States. So it's a pretty deliberate, a pretty complex scheme. And apparently, I'm getting from this that to get a driver's license in Tennessee, you have to be a citizen. So this guy he started producing all these extra documents to allow illegal aliens to have a driver's license in Tennessee and to function in Tennessee. So we're not going to read more about from this story. It just basically shows that idea of, first of all, it emphasizes the traitor spirit or mindset in Tennessee. And it also shows that idea of the name tag change, that subtle name tag change that traitors execute. So another story that came out, not sure how this relates exactly to treachery, but I know it's related somehow. It's another story about Ohio, and it's from the GatewayPundit.com, and the headline says, Ohio lottery disrupted by, quote, cybersecurity incident, unquote, over Christmas weekend. But actually, that should be corrected. It should be over Saturnalia weekend. As some of you may know, from the website where these recordings were posted, I'm not a big fan of that holiday. And in fact, if you do a search on Wikipedia of Saturnalia, you will see that Saturnalia is Xmas. That's what it is. It's the gift giving came from that Roman pagan feast. The idea of trees, you know, pine trees and, you know, killing all these trees and putting them as decorations for a couple of days, for a few days, and then throwing them away, that came from Saturnalia. And also there's gift giving, there's the trees, and the lights, you know, that, you know, putting up all this lighting in houses and stuff, that came from those days. Obviously, they didn't have electricity back in those days in the Roman times, but they also put up all these lights, fire, using fire, of course, during Saturnalia. So it's Saturnalia. Yes, that's what it is. So the thing is that over Saturnalia weekend, there was a cybersecurity incident. Oh, and you could say Christmas is almost like an incident of, it is an example of betrayal, because it has this name Christmas in English, you know, with Christ in it, which to make it sound like a Christian holiday. So if you are not a person of conviction or are not aware of the core principles of quote Christianity, to the outside, you see, oh, it's a Christian holiday because it has the Christian name tag. But if you start delving into the nature of Christianity, then you realize, oh, this has nothing to do with Christianity. And then you see that it has a different name tag. So it's a betrayal. It's just like a bait and switch kind of thing. It pretends to be one thing, but it really is, at the end of the day, another thing. And it sucks you in to certain things that have nothing to do with Christianity. And that's what all these moron Christians do all the time. The matriarchal Christians are constantly celebrating this holiday. And they get into the gift giving and the tree and the stockings. I'm not sure if the stockings thing came from Saturnalia, but it must have come from somewhere. But clearly it had nothing to do with Jesus Christ or anything like that. So they get suckered into all this stuff that has nothing to do with their values. And by the way, Saturnalia was introduced into the quote Christian calendar by the quote Christian church back in, who knows, in the 3rd, 4th century, because they wanted to get more people to like Christianity in the Roman pagan world. So since the pagans already had this pagan celebration, and they just said, okay, let's just shoehorn Christianity into this. And they said, okay, Jesus was born on the 25th of December, which is completely contradictory to what is said in the Bible. The Bible doesn't have a date, but because of certain things that you can see in the narration, the biblical narration of Jesus's birth, you know that it couldn't have been on the 25th of December. For example, the shepherds, it talks about the shepherds kind of watching over the sheep in the field, and then the angels appear and all that. Well, the shepherds would not be taking their sheep out to graze at night on the 25th of December, because it's just way too cold to do that. So those are, you know, examples, little tiny examples that you can go, okay, if you really believe that the Bible is for real, if you really believe that, you can't also believe that Christmas is Jesus's birthday, as they say. So when you start delving into it, you go, this has nothing to do with Christianity, but people continue to embrace it because they see the world embracing it, and it's like, oh, that makes us more popular. So all these Christians become like lap dogs trying to please the rest of the world, and that's how Saturnalia got introduced into the Christian quote Christian calendar, when the Christian elite, the leaders, wanted to please, you know, to act like dogs and please the world and say, hey, look, we're not that, we're more like you than you think, and we want to, Christianity is not as unpleasant as you think. Here's an example. We are celebrating Saturnalia as well, and that's when Jesus was born. So they were trying to get more people in the door, into the store. So that's they offered Saturnalia. So that's it is a treachery. And if you get into the Christmas spirit, you're getting into a spirit of treachery. You're getting suckered into something that is not real. And that's why at the end of the day, Christmas or Saturnalia, as I call it, or Xmas, is the time when a lot of people commit suicide. It's a time of great depression and sorrow, because it's an empty. And it's an empty holiday. It's a holiday that pretends to be about all these wonderful, cute little things. There's all these matriarchal things, but at the end of the day, it's just falsehood. Many people don't know the story of Santa Claus, which I prefer to call Satan Claus. I just changed the N and the T in Santa. Switch around and, you know, call him Satan Claus. People don't know the story of Satan Claus. In the old days in Europe, Satan Claus, when he was featured in drawings and stuff, was always featured like this German gremlin, this nasty like demonic creature, and it was slowly morphed into this loving, gentle grandpa type figure. And I think I think it might have been American companies that started doing that, doing the morphing of Satan Claus into this gentle grandfatherly creature to sell more of their products. And I know that in the UK, no more is Father Christmas. And I've always, when I was a kid, I would always say to myself, why is it called Santa Claus? Santa, if you say it to a person who is like of Italian or Spanish descent, they would say, if you just say the word Santa, that means saint, but it's a female saint. So you have this guy who who's called saint, but with the female form of saint, Saint Claus. It's a weird name. Why would they give him a name that has this female origin to it? To me, it's because he really is Satan Claus. So he is disguised as this pleasant figure, but he's really there's evil behind it, and that's why there's so much emptiness about Xmas. And I'm digressing a great deal, but and I think this is part of what needed to be said. I think that's why we're saying all of this. I was sitting at a place typing away, working on the next posting for the website where these recordings are posted, and it was my first time in that place, a coffee place. I always buy things there, but it's always to go. But that time I stayed in. It seems like the theme of, if you, from the outside, it looks a certain way, but then when you're inside, things look different, kind of thing. But when I was in there, I was typing away, and they had music playing in the loudspeakers. This was this week, by the way. And they had a lot of Xmas or Saturnalia music playing, but it was like modern style music, and I think they even had, they were playing a song, they sounded like the Backstreet Boys, but it was about Christmas and all this stuff. So they were just playing one Christmas song after another, but it was like from modern acts, not, their traditional boring Christmas music. It was just depressing Christmas music with a modern twist to it. All these artists, recent artists who have been kind of singing about Christmas. It was surprising to me. I had never heard those songs, but they clearly were from recent artists, and it had a recent, like a quote, modern beat to them. And I was trying not to pay attention to the music as I was typing. And the songs were all about joy and caring for each other and all this stuff, but as I was typing away, I don't know, it was like I got really, really, really depressed. And when I left that place, I felt an emptiness. Just, it's like someone had taken a Hoover and sucked the life out of my a little life that is left in my soul. Just sucked it out. And I felt so empty, so much void, like a vacuum on the inside. I, to be frank, I didn't make the connection at the beginning, like, because I thought, maybe some other stuff going on, but I realized that that great emptiness that I had was greatly triggered by just being forced to listen to all that Xmas music. There is something draining about that spirit. If you are trapped in it, it just destroys you on the inside. And as I've always said to people, what happens with Xmas is that it's the time of the season that gets people to think that they are better than they really are. It's like, oh, we're not that bad. We're a people full of love and understanding and caring for each other. But it's all like everybody pretending to be that for a short season, and then they go back to their normal selves. It's all betrayal. There's all this pretending to be something you're not, to please other people, to please yourself and please other people. And then at the end of the day, you go back to being your old miserable self. So Xmas season is obviously a season of treachery and betrayal. It just has those themes, and that's why a lot of people kill themselves during Xmas season, because it's like a vacuum that drains the life out of you, and that's what treachery does eventually. It sucks the life out of you. And I think that's another theme another quality related to betrayal and treachery, that you are wanting to please other people and everything looks fine, but it sucks the soul and the life out of you and leaves you empty. And that in many cases leads people to commit suicide. And I think, you know, like in the Bible, for example, the story of the most famous traitor in the Bible, we all know is Judas Iscariot, and in the Bible it says that he after having betrayed Jesus, he felt bad about it, and you know the story about the 30 pieces of silver and all that, and then it says that he went to hang himself, so he committed suicide. That's how he ended up dying. So treachery and suicide in many cases are related. When you enter into the world of treachery, you expose yourself to these spirits of, or these this mindset of emptiness that just comes and envelops you, and that's Xmas season for you. So I know that we had to talk about this. It was not my intention, but it's all related to betrayal. So now here, the thing with the Ohio lottery being disrupted. It says here, the Ohio lottery announced Wednesday that the state lottery's computer systems were disrupted by a, quote, cybersecurity incident Christmas Eve that is still affecting the lottery. Retail sales of draw games and scratch tickets were not affected, however. Cashing of winning tickets over $599 via mobile or at, quote, super retailers, unquote, has been affected. The lottery commission said it disconnected the, quote, key systems to contain the issue, unquote. An investigation is taking place. So I know it's not a coincidence that this happened in Ohio, and I guess the connection is with Xmas. The connection to treachery is that this happened over the, quote, Xmas or Saturnalia weekend. And as someone kind of sneaking in and disrupting, there was a cybersecurity incident, someone sneaking in and doing stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if this happened because someone in the Ohio Lottery company, it's not a company, but you know, the people who run the Ohio Lottery within the state government, I wouldn't be surprised if one or more of those people opened the door to the cyber attack. So there was a traitor inside the group, shall we say, who opened the door for the cyber security attack. And I know it's not a coincidence. Why did this happen, and why were they disrupting the Ohio Lottery? I mean, what they gain from that? I just feel that it's related to betrayal, and it's emphasizing the spirit or mindset of betrayal inside the state of Ohio, so betrayal and in Ohio over the Saturnalia season, and another story. See, all these headlines about Tennessee and Ohio, I know it's not a coincidence. Why are there all these headlines coming out that have to do with Tennessee and Ohio? So another headline, and I don't run this website, the gatewaypundit.com. It's not like I'm telling them, hey, run stories on Tennessee and Ohio. It's things that happen. They feel the need to post these things. And I know that they feel the need to post these things as confirmation. To the things we're saying, even if they couldn't care less what we're saying in these recordings, because they would be scandalized or horrified by the things we say in these recordings, because these people who run the Gateway Pundit and other websites are mostly diehard conservatives. So here on the gatewaypundit.com on the 26th of December. Of 2023, the next day after the last story we just read, it says Muslim mob terrorizes Christmas or Saturnalia shoppers in small peaceful Tennessee city. It says a Muslim mob of pro-Palestinian militants terrorized shoppers on, to say it correctly, on Saturnalia Eve in the small city of Collierville, Tennessee. Quote, you should be ashamed, unquote, the Muslim militants shouted at shoppers as others repeatedly honked their car horns. One KWAM listener said the Muslim militants, quote, clogged the streets to prevent shopper ingress, egress, and unleashed individual terrorists out to run up and down the sidewalks with Palestinian flags. And it says, quote, as a Collierville citizen, I strongly believe and support the First and Second Amendment rights of every American citizen, unquote, conservative leader Justin Johnson told KWAM, quote, protests should not be intrusive and dangerous to drivers, shoppers, or the protesters, unquote. Quote, this was irresponsible and not appropriate for the time or place, unquote, Johnson said. Quote, as a Christian, I support Israel and their sovereign right to defend themselves against the barbaric terrorist attack from Hamas, unquote. And that will bring us up, bring us to another point a little later. You know, so he's this conservative leader, Justin Johnson, whoever he is, in Tennessee, saying, ah, as a Christian, I support Israel. You know, that. And we've talked about this before, and we'll talk about this a little later because of some stories that came out, which made me chuckle. But it's a laughter mixed with a lot of sadness in my being, because it's a reflection of the stupidity of America, the American conservative, and the American matriarchal Christian. But so we wanted to mention this story that the Muslims were you know, waving the Palestinian flag, but it's really the Jordanian flag. You know, as we've said, Palestinians were people kicked out of Jordan. They are not from Palestine. They're from Jordan. They were kicked out of Jordan, and because they were causing trouble. It was like a group of people that were causing trouble in the kingdom of Jordan. Back in the day, and the king of Jordan said, hey, because they were even trying to overthrow him, so he kicked them out and said, hey, and they knew that by kicking them out, because, you know, Israel was right next door, they were going to give Israel a problem. So it was like a double benefit. On the one hand, they get these traitors, because the Palestinians were traitors that were trying to betray the people, the kingdom of Jordan, where they lived, and try to overthrow the king and, you know, do whatever they else they wanted to do. So the double benefit was the king of Jordan got these traitors out of his country. And then these traitors became a problem for their hated enemy, Israel. So it was like a double win, a win-win situation for the king of Jordan at the time. I think his name was Abdullah, I'm not sure. So these are Jordanians, So they have a title. It's like the name tag thing. You know, we are Palestinians. No, you're Jordanians, boy. You're Jordanians. That's what you are. And that's where you're from. And you're just out. And by the way, no one wants them. No one wants the Jordanians in their country to be absorbed in their country. None of the Arab countries want them because they know that these people are traitors and they're trouble. But I digress. So they are related to treachery, and they are going around disrupting the holiday season of treachery. So there is treachery in the air in that sense. Other than that, I don't know exactly what to get or what to discern from this incident. But it just shows the movement of treachery through the state of Tennessee. And all these pathetic so-called Tennessee Christians doing their Saturnalia shopping to celebrate a pagan feast that has nothing to do with their core values of Christianity. It has to do because we are celebrating Jesus' birth, even though he was not born on this day. And then I'd say to them, well, tell me in your Bible where it says that Jesus told you to celebrate his birth, to the day of his birth. That is a very important thing. If anything, if you go to your Bible, you stupid conservative Christian, you will see that the only time that Jesus ever said to his disciples, celebrate something about me, it's always remember my death. That's that's what he said to them. Always remember my death, and that's when you do the. What the Catholics call communion, or the last the sacrament thing of the bread and the wine and all that, that is in remembrance of his death. He never said remember my birth, and I think that's in the Bible there was no effort ever made to pinpoint the exact date of birth, because apparently to the God of the Bible it wasn't that important. So when you're celebrating his birth and doing all this rubbish, you're not being consistent with your core principles. You're being a hypocrite or a fool. And you're opening up the atmosphere to an atmosphere of betrayal. Of treachery. And so as these Tennessee Christians are going around doing their Saturnalia shopping, they open the door for treachery to just step in. And this is what these guys represented, is they just swarmed the shopping mall. It is betrayal. Betrayal is in the air. All these traitors, pro-traitor people, because the Palestinians or Jordanians are traitors. They have treachery in them all the time. They are a nation of traitors. So they started swarming the place, and these Tennessee Christians are all like appalled. Like, why is this happening? They don't realize it's like a physical manifestation of the treachery they are letting into the system by embracing all this Saturnalia rubbish. And the Saturnalia rubbish comes because they don't stick to the core principles that they claim to believe in. So they are, in a sense, without meaning to, but they're doing it, they are betraying their core values, their core beliefs. And then they're surprised that all these traitors are running around. They're a manifestation of the treachery you've opened yourself up to, you stupid matriarchal Tennessee Christian. So, it's all in the context of betrayal. Maybe there are certain things. I know that we're being a little bit ambiguous about the things we're saying, but in all these things, it's like a quality about treachery is being betrayed, portrayed. And I think one of the qualities here that's being portrayed is that when you are willing to compromise your core principles, you open the atmosphere for betrayal to just sweep in, like this mob that disrupted the Saturnalia shopping. And then you are surprised that, you know, you're getting betrayed right and left. Well, you opened yourself up to it. That's like what happened to Trump. He started kind of compromising on some of his core principles because he was doing the art of the deal, the dog thing. And then he got surrounded by all these backstabbing traitors. And then the Trump supporters and Trump himself were all surprised and outraged at all these traitors. But, you know, you asked for it. You brought them in by the attitudes in your heart and mind. And the same thing with the conservative Christians. The matriarchal Christians are all traitors at the end of the day. That's what they are. And when they embrace all these matriarchal values that have nothing to do with their core principles, then they open the door for betrayal in the atmosphere. And then they are surprised when they themselves are betrayed right and left. And that's what happens. When you enter into an attitude of betrayal, you open the atmosphere for betrayal, and you, the traitor, are betrayed yourself, if you catch what I'm saying. It's like you enter into a world of treachery, and it's like you're backstabbing someone one moment, and then the next moment, three people are stabbing you in the back because you let those three people in by allowing treachery into your heart, if you see what I'm saying. And I think that's it's like betrayal becomes like a flood. You open betrayal up in your heart, and you compromise on your core principles, and then you open this floodgate of traitors coming and attacking you from behind. Another story that we wanted to mention, again, related to Ohio. This was posted on the 27th of December, 2023. And it says, it was posted on noqreport.com, which always redirects you to americafirstreport.com. And it said it was cross-posted from somewhere else. But the thing is that the headline reads, quote, "Courage is required," unquote. Days before deadline, Ohio's RINO, you know, there's the acronym, Ohio's RINO governor has yet to sign bill banning trans butchery procedures for minors. So it says Republican Governor Mike DeWine of Ohio has yet to sign a bill prohibiting doctors from performing transgender procedures on minors despite a rapidly approaching deadline. If signed, Ohio's law would join over 20 other states that have passed laws limiting access to transgender medical procedures for minors. Many politicians choose to duck this issue as they feel they will be damned if they do and damned if they don't, unquote. Stella O'Malley, psychotherapist and director of GenSpect, told the DCNF. Not sure what the DCNF is, but okay. Article originally titled "Courage is Required." Days before deadline, Ohio governor has yet to sign bill banning sex change procedures for minors at the Daily Caller News Foundation. So, okay, that's what DCNF means, a Daily Caller News Foundation. That's another, the Daily Caller is another website. And I don't go there very much because they are traitors themselves. They don't realize it. They say certain things that go, my goodness, these people are betraying their own conservative movement. It's like, yeah. So it's traitors talking about traitors. It's ironic. So it says here, Ohio's legislature passed a bill banning sex change procedures for minors on December 13th. But Republican Governor Mike DeWine has yet to make a decision on the legislation just 3 days before the deadline. So, apparently passed the House, in Ohio, and it passed the Senate by a 24-8 vote. And in the House, it passed by a 61-27 vote. So it passed by a significant margin. I mean, a 3-1 margin in the Ohio Senate and a more than 2-1 margin in the House of Representatives. And so, in other words, it's all ready to go and with wide political approval. It's not like it passed by a couple of votes. And the son of a bitch, Mike DeWine, and there's a picture of him. He looks yucky, disgusting, subhuman piece of trash. Yeah, he's going to burn in hell the day he dies. Worthless little bastard boy. The thing is that he's been sitting on the bill, and he's not going to sign it because he's afraid to sign it. And that, there's another story that came out later saying that it was official. He eventually declined to sign it. We're going to read that story later. But that's an example of a traitor in Ohio. And by the way, this DeWine... He's related to Trump because we may have shared on this before, but it wasn't that recently either. Trump was doing some sort of stupid rally in Ohio, and I forget the exact sequence of events. I don't know if it was Mike DeWine who was speaking, the governor of Ohio speaking, right before Trump, like introducing him, or I don't know if, but DeWine was there and he was on the stage, I think, in some form, with Trump, and then Trump came up to speak, and he said something about DeWine. He mentioned the governor DeWine, and I guess he was thanking him for his support or whatever, and his courageous or great. He's doing a great job in Ohio. He's always saying that. He's always saying, "Oh, you're doing great. You're doing great." So whenever he says you're doing great, it means nothing because he says it to. He goes out and stands in front of the tree and he goes, "Oh, you're doing great. You're doing great." He looks at the lawn, in someone's, backyard and he says to the lawn, "You're doing great. You're doing great." It's meaningless. You know, he just says it to anything and everything. Especially when he wants to, get on people's good side. So, he was saying something like that. And then the crowd booed. His own supporters booed him as he was praising DeWine. And when he heard the boos, he went, oh, don't do that. Like he chided the crowd. He scolded the crowd for doing that. How dare you do that? Like, oh, that's not right. So he, instead of realizing, hey, you know, I made a mistake here by praising this guy, and instead of hearing the boos and saying, well, why are these people booing him? No, instead he said, no. He tried to convince them not to do that. And that says to me, he is aligned with the traitor. Because Trump is a traitor at heart. And why did he want to defend DeWine? Because DeWine is promoting him. You know, quid pro quo, the art of the deal. And now I have an important political supporter in the state of Ohio, and he's important for me in my campaign. So I'm going to support him as long as he supports me. Quid pro quo, Clarice, quid pro quo. You know, this constant art of the deal. So Trump is a traitor, defending a traitor. And I wondered, will Trump criticize DeWine for doing this? I don't think so, because Trump said no. He supported me, so I'm gonna do him a solid and kind of support him by not saying anything against him, even though I disagree with what he did. But this is not just a matter of disagreement over the color that you're gonna paint your house. It's a disagreement over whether you're going to allow little kids to be mutilated by these, gender confusion philosophies, and to have their bodies mutilated because they are in a temporary state of gender confusion, and then it becomes irreversible. These kids, some girls are known as tomboys. They like to play with the boys and play sports and roughhouse and all that, and then they grow up to be these beautiful, very feminine women, but they had the stage, stage in their youth of being tomboys, and now the all these gender confusion people come in like vultures and say, hey, you, this is because you are a man trapped in a woman's body. And then they brainwash the kid, and then they force the kid to have these life-altering mutilations. And then afterwards, the femininity begins to blossom in them. But by then, it's too late, and now their lives have been destroyed. This is what DeWine is not trying to support. It is horrible. And again, a governor in the state of betrayal, the state of Ohio, pretending to be a Republican, pretending to be a Trump supporter. Trump is obviously clearly also against these this butchery stuff, gender confusion butchery. And so he has one name, but he really is another. He's a traitor from the state of betrayal. It makes sense. He's the perfect governor for the traitors in Ohio, the traitor state of Ohio, just like, you know, Tennessee as well. Tennessee and Ohio have something special. They have, they are the strongholds of betrayal in the country. I don't know why, but it is what it is. As I think I've shared with you, my awareness of Tennessee being a state of betrayal, of treachery, came years ago. I it's not like I knew someone from Tennessee and I said, oh, you know, he's a traitor, therefore everybody in Tennessee is a traitor. It was just this awareness one day. I was hearing something about Tennessee, and just it's like a voice came inside of me. Tennessee is a state of traitors. And the same thing has been with Ohio. Ohio is, these two states have the market cornered on betrayal. I don't know why. But okay, so the next story is related to the one we just read. This is a little more recent. This is from dispatch.com. Apparently, this is the Columbus Dispatch, a newspaper in Columbus, Ohio. So their website apparently is just dispatch.com. And they posted on the 29th of December, the day before this recording, 2023. It was posted on the 28th of December and updated on the 29th. And the headline says, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine vetoes House Bill 68 on transgender medical care sports. And then he said, quote, were I to sign House Bill 68 or were House Bill 68 to become law, Ohio would be saying that the state that the government knows better what is medically best for a child. So that was his excuse. So he's saying, he's seeing it as a medical issue. What's medically best? This is psychologically. This has nothing to do with medicine. It's not like the kid is sick and he needs to have his, male organ cut off, because if he doesn't get it cut off, he's going to die. A young lady say, if you don't remove my breasts, I'm going to die in 4 weeks. It is psychological. This is all psychological stuff. It's medical procedures related to psychological opinion. It has nothing to do with medicine, with saving. So you see the clouding, the gaslighting, all the clouding, all the I'm showing myself to be a real conservative who believes in government staying out of people's private lives, and that's why I'm doing this. You worthless son of a bitch. And I say to another worthless son of a bitch, Trump, are you going to call him out on this? Are you going to say, I now agree with the people booing that day, and now I understand why they were booing, they were right, I was wrong, and I'm going to condemn the worthless son of a bitch, DeWine in Ohio? And I would challenge Trump to do that, but he's not going to do it because he's a traitor too. He's just a traitor at a different level, but he's still a traitor. He is a traitor to the people who support him. So the people who support him are against DeWine, and because they know DeWine is a rhino, because they're inside Ohio. It's like they, from the outside, he looks like a conservative and a Republican. But if you're in Ohio, you know the guy is a has a different label on him. He's Irish. He's not British. He's not like the rest of Great Britain. He is an Irishman. And that's what he is, an Irishman who has an external label of British, if you see what I'm saying. It's the same thing. And instead of Trump saying, hey, those people in Ohio knew what they were talking about when they were booing him, instead of saying, hey, I now understand and I'm going to condemn him, instead of that, he's just going to pretend like nothing happened, because he's a traitor. He betrayed his own supporters, who were telling him, hey, you shouldn't be standing up for that worthless bastard, because he represents everything that's wrong with the Republican Party. But he's not going to do that. So, okay. So those are the stories that we wanted to talk about that relate to Tennessee and Ohio and betrayal. And I hope that in my muddled way, and I apologize for being so ambiguous, but that in these things that you perceive certain principles about betrayal. And we've tried to point a few of them out, but I think there are more that are hidden in these stories. So at least one of the principles that is clear is the dog thing. You start wanting to please other people, and that's how you become a traitor. Another principle was the name tag thing, that on the outside, traitors and non-traitors kind of blend in. They all look the same. But when you're inside, and when you know the details, the specific of the core values, then you realize, then you start seeing the distinction, you know, like between like a Republican and a rhino kind of thing, a conservative and a rhino, and sort of, that sort of thing. Between someone who looks British on the outside but is really Irish on the inside. And then another principle that we saw is that you open yourself up to treachery, and then you get a flood, you allow in a flood of traitors to infiltrate the atmosphere. And then as you're stabbing someone in the back, three people are stabbing you in the back, because once you let in treachery, it's like this horde of Mongolian horde that just comes in and ravages the atmosphere, and so you start betraying and you get betrayed yourself. Okay, so now we wanted to just mention this in passing. So we've been talking about Tennessee and Ohio, but another place that has featured prominently when it comes to betrayal is Ireland. So we wanted to say something related to that. So I'm going to click here. And this story was posted on the dailymail.co.uk. The story was posted on the 28th of December, 2023. And it reads, Aaron Rodgers hilariously mocked by Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I hate this headline, but I just have to read it. The worthless idiot who wrote this wrote it like that. Aaron Rodgers hilariously mocked by Ryan Fitzpatrick, who introduces himself as, quote, twice vaccinated, unquote, to the Jets quarterback after his bizarre anti-vax rant to Pat McAfee this week. And bizarre rant. So who the hell is he to label it bizarre? And I hope this, the writer is Jack Bezantz, that's his name. So let's hope that the blood clots, work on him and kill him, in 6 years, or less. I hope it's a couple of years and not 6 years, but at least 6 years. That's what he has, in terms of time left, worthless son of a bitch. And then he's going to go burn in hell. And then we'll see how hilarious Ryan Fitzpatrick sounds when he's down there screaming like a worthless little rat, like a little bitch. Cursed is he. So the thing is that what happened was Aaron Rodgers had this interview with a guy called Pat McAfee, who used to be a punter for the Indianapolis Colts, for the Colts, and I remember him because I used to be a Colts fan, so I remember Pat McAfee. And McAfee is an Irish name, interestingly enough, or a Celtic name at least. But the thing is, and I think Rodgers is kind of a Celtic-ish name, maybe not, but it has this quasi-Celtic flavor to it. So a lot of Celtic stuff, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, obviously, it's about as Irish a name as you can get. Ryan is an Irish name, and Fitzpatrick, you know, Patrick, St. Patrick, you know, it's like, I mean, clearly super Irish name. So a lot of Irish names here, or Celtic-sounding names. The thing is that Aaron Rodgers had this interview with Pat McAfee, who is this, who now is some sort of commentator or whatever, interviewer on the internet, and he started talking about how he's against the so-called vaccination, you know, the mRNA gene therapy that passes for vaccination. And he was saying stuff. So we've mentioned Aaron Rodgers before. He's an American football quarterback. And we talked about him being with the Jets and all that and how I used to intercede against it. But I think that all that that interceding against him has been kind of working on him. Even though he's still a traitor, at the end of the day, he's not as much of a traitor as he was before. It's like he's slowly returning. And he became a traitor, a full-blown traitor, because of the influence of this woman. And that's another thing I think that is related to treachery. Usually there is a woman involved, sometimes literally, but sometimes figuratively. There's some sort of seduction that happens, and that's what leads you on the path to betrayal. So he had this influence of this Olivia something, this model, and he something got into his head, and that's when I started interceding against him. And then they eventually broke off, so they are no longer a couple. But the thing is that all this interceding against him seems to have at least done some good, because he's kind of like, he's been saying some things that I go, wow, that's interesting that he would say that. And one of the things that he's been saying is that he's against the injections, and he was criticized a lot in the last couple of years because everybody else in the NFL was taking the injection. He was speaking out against it. So he had this interview a few days ago where he went on what the Daily Mail and this son of a bitch, Jack Bezance, was going to scream like a little girl in hell when he burns, when he dies and goes there very soon, within a few years. They called it a bizarre anti-vax rant because these people are idiots. They don't understand the science. They don't know the science. They don't care for the science. All they care about is pleasing each other. They know it's the popular thing. That's the cool thing to get injected. So that's what they are, traitors. This Jack Bezance or whatever, son of a bitch, is a traitor. A traitor to the truth, to himself. He's a traitor to his own body. A moron. He betrayed his own body, and he's by promoting the injection and having been injected himself. But the thing is that Aaron Rodgers appeared in this interview with Pat McAfee, but that was days ago. And then later, he was being interviewed on television by Ryan Fitzpatrick. So Ryan Fitzpatrick used to be a football quarterback, American football quarterback as well, just like Aaron Rodgers, but he's now retired. And I remember watching him, and I remember he used to play for the Buffalo Bills. And I would watch him. That was years ago, and not too long ago, when I was still watching the NFL. And I remember that he was so, he looked like a nice guy. There was something about him, that, you know, nice, that certain niceness, and he had this kind of glint in his eye, like he was clever. That was like naughty, clever kind of thing, but in a kind of innocent, semi-innocent way. I don't know how to explain it. And he was known for being a graduate of, I think, Harvard or Yale. So he was like, he went to this very smart and university, and he got good grades. So he's like, he was being portrayed as this kind of nerdy, quirky kind of guy. And I remember liking him, and I would intercede for him in games, but it was like, I don't know how to explain it. It was like interceding for a sponge, a wet sponge. It's like he had no spine. I don't know how to explain it. There was no fire in him. You couldn't support him because he was very good, actually. Technically, as a quarterback, he was very accurate with his passes, and being, you know, a smart guy, he knew the he could understand the plays well and read the defense and all that stuff. But there was something about him. He had no fire to win. You couldn't see the intensity in him. Everything was all nice and blasé. It was like interceding for a wet sponge. He had no spine. It was empty. And he became a journeyman quarterback because, you know, you can't be a winner like that. I mean, you can have the technical skills and the intelligence to understand plays and strategies and things like that. But if you don't have the fire in you, you're useless. He was not a conqueror. And Aaron Rodgers, as much as I hated him, he always had that. He not only had the physical talent, he had the fire. And that's why it was very difficult to intercede against him, because he was like a force to be dealt with. But eventually he would always lose the big game at the end because, you know, he was running up against a wall, but he was running up against it. He was not just walking up to the wall. He was running up against it. He was a force to be dealt with, but he had the fire. Wrong as, you know, misguided as he was in his life, he was a force to be dealt with. Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, other than being a commentator for some network, he's a nobody. He's never going to be remembered in the annals of American football as having been one of the great quarterbacks, not even close. He doesn't even come close to all the numbers and all the achievements that Aaron Rodgers has had. Aaron Rodgers is going to be in the Hall of Fame, the National Football League Hall of Fame, when he retires, for sure. He's statistically one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, even though I don't have always interceded against him, but not at the beginning. I remember interceding for him when he won a Super Bowl, but he didn't realize that he was winning. He didn't understand why he was winning, and that's why things got to his head, and then the other woman came into his life, and he became a traitor. Now he's coming out of that treachery slowly, but even so, like, he came to New York to kind of prove that he could break the curse that has been placed on New York on the quarterback position. The quarterback position on the New York Jets has been cursed for all of eternity. It is cursed. Anyone who plays for the New York Jets as a quarterback, I feel sorry for them. They're cursed. Something similar happens with the Denver Broncos, but that's another story. So the thing is that he, even though he came to try to prove that he could break the curse, then 4 plays into the season, Achilles heel, he was done. And he hasn't played ever since. The thing is that he's coming back from the treachery, and then he has this interview with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then he gets hit with this comment out of nowhere. Ryan Fitzpatrick introduces himself and says, so here's how it goes. He says, "Hey, Aaron, Ryan Fitzpatrick here. How are you?" And then he said, "Class of 2005, twice vaccinated." So I guess I don't know what he means by class of 2005, and then Rodgers appeared to take the joke well, greeting Fitzpatrick with a "Hey, buddy," before laughing at his vaccination gag. The sort of official wrote the story, says the injured Jets quarterback Rodgers, who's openly anti-vax, made his latest vaccination claims on his Tuesday appearance on McAfee's show. And who cares what else this little girly boy Bassance has to say. He's going to burn in hell very soon. So, son of a bitch, we'll might as well shut him up and not quote him anymore. The thing is that this was an ambush. They were not going to talk about injections. They were going to talk about his injury and the Jets, who were going to play Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns of Ohio. But this was an ambush. This is what a traitor does, and this was what Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Irish, did to Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers laughed it off, but I think he should have been offended by that. I would have responded, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that." That's what I would have said when he said twice vaccinated, class of 2005, twice vaccinated. I would say, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. How are the blood clots doing?" I would have said something like that, and kind of gotten back at him, not just laughed along, or like, "Hey, buddy." I mean, how do you? That's not a comeback. And he didn't understand. He was being attacked. He like a traitor. He came and attacked him from behind with an unexpected jab at him, and cursed it. Is it Ryan Fitzpatrick, loser, who never amounted to much? He had a lot of talent. He could have been a winner. He could have, like the old quote, he could have been a contender. But he wasn't, because he didn't have the fire in him. He was spineless. And obviously a spineless guy will get the injection. He will get injected multiple times, because he, to stand up to these, to the culture, to the mass media, and to the superstition and the falsehood, you have to have a spine in you. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is anything. He's worse than SpongeBob, because at least SpongeBob had, even though SpongeBob is technically spineless, at least SpongeBob has some character in him, some personality. This Ryan Fitzpatrick is not even that. He's just like a wet sponge, worthless, an Irish traitor. And I think the reason why we mentioned this is in the context of that betrayal. And that's another quality with traitors, is they always sneak on up on you from behind with an unexpected attack. But if you are aware of them in a certain sense, if you're aware of the spirit of betrayal and treachery, they will somehow seem like they're sneaking up on you, but you kind of know they're coming. I don't know how to explain that. It's like you're aware that they're coming. You just don't know when, but you know that they're coming. They don't take you completely by surprise. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, so now let's talk about other traitors. And I always have to say traitors like that, because when I just say traitor, it sounds like trader, like someone who trades, T-R-A-D-E-R. And I think it's kind of fitting that the words, at least in the American pronunciation of it, sound very similar, trader and trader, because a traitor is a person who starts wheeling and dealing, who starts trading his principles with other people to please them, like a dog. So, but I just to emphasize, I would say traitor. Let's talk about another group of traitors. We've talked about Tennessee, we've talked about Ohio, talk about the Irish, and now let's talk about the other traitors. And this headline was posted on thegatewaypundit.com on the 23rd of December, the day that the previous recording was posted, that same day. And the headline reads, the Israel guys, three Israeli hostages were shot dead by the IDF in Gaza. What really happened? So IDF is, I think, Israeli Defense Forces. So it says here, three Israeli hostages were in a building that the still unnamed IDF unit had surrounded. three of them came out waving a white flag, and the IDF unit shot all three and killed two. One ran back into the house, ran out the back door, and another unit shot him a second time and killed him. Ben Hilton explained. And I'm laughing, and I'm sorry for doing that. I laugh at the irony of the situation, but not at the guy being killed. So I hope that does not get misunderstood. So it says here, from our armchair perspective, it sounds inexcusable, Ben said. Who was Ben? I'm not sure. Ben Hilton. Quote, it's easy to say, how could you not see that he was waving a white flag? How could you not see that he was in civilian clothes? But this is brutal urban warfare, the stuff nightmares are made of. And these IDF units are some of the best at urban warfare in the world, because they have had to deal with this stuff over and over again in Jenin and Shechem. Interesting, because I've been mentioning Shechem, that name, elsewhere. In Shechem, which is Arab for Nablus, from the Roman Flavia Neapolis. And I'm going to stop talking about him. Nablus. Every time I think of Nablus, I think of something that happened in the 1990s. Some of you may be too young to remember this. But back in the 1990s, like going back in time, I used to watch CNN back in the 1990s when CNN was still tolerable to watch. And they were running stories on the massacre at Nablus. Nablus is a city, you know, somewhere, maybe in Lebanon or maybe in the, quote, Palestinian territory or whatever. And some terrorist attack had happened, and the Israelis went in to fight the terrorists. And they went in, they chased them into Nablus, and the Palestinians started promoting this story that the Israelis had massacred a whole bunch of people in Nablus. And CNN and everybody ran with the story that the Israelis had committed this horrible atrocity in Nablus. And then the journalists started going to Nablus to kind of report the carnage, to show how evil the Israelis were. And when they went in there, they found out there was nothing. There was no massacre. There was no nothing. And it was reported, you know, the hoax. But the Palestinian leaders were saying it like it was gospel truth. Like, this is what happened in Nablus and what these evil Israelis have done to us. But it was all propaganda. And it was this example, this glaring example of how these, quote, Palestinians, the Jordanian traitors, are just liars. They lie through their teeth about everything. Because to them, it's, you know, words are just words you use to achieve what you want. They are like Democrats. They are Democrats in the Middle East. You know, they just use words however they need to use them to get what they want, to achieve what they want. And they don't think twice about lying. To them, lying is a sacred honor and tradition. The means justify the ends. As long as they lie to get what they want, then they will be recompensed with 72 virgins and all that rubbish. So the thing is that that's what I think of every time I think of Nablus. So all these people who are complaining about all the atrocities of the Israelis and all that, I feel like asking them, you stupid idiot. Do you know the word Nablus? Does that ring a bell to you, stupid idiot? And I know that most of these, especially the young people in America, you know, this is the stupidest generation in American history. That's why this is the generation in which America died. But these people, they barely know, they couldn't point Gaza out on a map. They wouldn't be able to point Israel or the Middle East. They're so ignorant. They're so ignorant. If you ask them who was the vice president in the years of Bush 43, they wouldn't know. I mean, I don't think they would know who the vice president under Nixon was, and who replaced Nixon. I mean, they don't know history. They don't know anything. They're just they're just these tabla rasa, these empty plates, and that's why the liberal elite are so they can so easily manipulate these people, because they're just empty. It's like there's nothing there, so they can fill it with whatever they want. So that's what I think of when I see Nablusser. So I'm going back here to the quote. So I'm going to read again. And these IDF units are some of the best at urban warfare in the world, because they have had to deal with this stuff over and over again in Jenin, in Shechem, and then in parentheses it says Arab Nablus from the Roman Flavia Neapolis. Close parenthesis, in Ramallah and other Arab cities, where they've had to go in and fight terrorists house to house. Also, Israel has invested a lot of R&D into developing better urban warfare equipment, training, and tactics. These guys really know what they're doing. This means the odds are, quote, this was not a cut-and-dried situation, unquote, Ben said. So Ben, this Ben Hilton is some sort of, Ben Hilton from the Israel Guys. So he's some sort of internet YouTube commentator. So he's commenting on what happened with the IDF and the killing of these three Israelis. So apparently the Hamas people let these three Israeli hostages go. And the Israeli hostages went up to the Israeli soldiers with white flags, like saying, hey, we're hostages and all that. And the Israeli soldiers said, I don't think so. So they just, you know, killed two. One of them was able to escape, and he was caught by the other group. And this Ben Hilton is saying, well, you know, and I understand what he's saying, you know, because the Arabs being traitors the way they are, they have done this before, where they pretend to be Israelis, and they even speak Hebrew to the soldiers, and they wave the white flag and some sort of white handkerchief or whatever, and then they end up, you know, being attacking the soldiers, who get caught off guard. But so I understand, you know, they have to be on their toes. And so what I'm saying is, these people were not Arab liars. These were Israelis who were, you know, were let go, and the Jordanians did it on purpose, because they enjoy seeing that, you know, the Israelis killing each other. But the units there, obviously, they didn't do their job right, because it was just three people, first of all. And you say, well, you don't know if they have bombs on them and they're going to detonate and so forth. But they could have had the instinct kick in and say, hey, you know, maybe these guys are Israelis. They could have said, stay at a distance and undress in front of us. You know, it sounds like a bad thing, but, you know, and humiliating, but under the circumstances, undress. I want to see what's inside of you. And these guys would have undressed, because they're Israelis. They would have, followed instructions and to show that they were on the same side. And these three people, Israeli hostages, were betrayed by their own people. There was betrayal there, because these people said, oh, no, whatever. So they just shot them dead. And one of them was able to escape, and then he got caught by a second unit. And I know that if they had acted with a more reasonable understanding or more perceptive, more intuitive awareness of things, they would have been able to resolve it and get these guys free, and not have killed them. So I just find this interesting. These three Israeli hostages betrayed by their own IDF soldiers, and it just speaks of betrayal, because these IDF soldiers didn't do the right thing. They did not do the right thing. I know that they would have been able to recognize them as real Israeli hostages and would have been able to rescue them. They just had to do it right. So they ended up betraying their own people. But it also goes to the wider issue of how the veil has been removed, the veil of protection. The Israelis have no protection anymore. It's gone. The truth has removed the veil from them. So they are at their own mercy. And it's like the truth saying, hey, you think you're that good? Deal with it yourselves. Let's see how it goes. And this is how it goes. They think they can do it themselves, and they end up killing their own people. And I know this is not a coincidence. So speaking of the Israeli traitors, another story came out, and I just found this so laughable in a kind of sad way, in an angering way. This was posted on thegatewaypundit.com, and posted on the 24th of December, 2023. So it was the Saturnalia Eve, shall we say. The headline reads, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's Christmas message. Unite with Israel in battle against barbarism. And there's the video. So he posted some sort of video. So it says here, he shared his message on X, you know, the thing that used to be called Twitter, the website formerly known as Twitter, saying, quote, to our Christian friends around the world, Merry Christmas, unquote. And then he said, Christmas is supposed to be a time of goodwill to all men and peace on earth, unquote. So he's quoting from the New Testament here, because that thing about the goodwill to all men, that's from the Gospel of Luke, I think. So he's quoting the New Testament. You know, what's called the New Testament. It's really one big book. But there's artificial split of Old Testament and New Testament, but that's another story. But the thing is that then he said, well, we don't have peace on earth, not in our part anyway, and we certainly don't see the goodwill to all men. We are facing monsters who murder children in front of their parents, and parents in front of their children, who raped and beheaded women, who burned babies alive, who took babies hostages. This is a battle not only of Israel against these barbarians, but of civilization against barbarism. And I know in this we have your support. And I want to thank you for your support. I want to thank you for your prayers. And I want to assure you, as we stand together, we will also prevail. We shall win this war and secure our common values and our common future. Thank you. So he's talking to Christians. Remember, this is the message to Christians about Christmas. That's why he's saying, you know, I thank your prayers and all that, and I thank you for your support. And all the Christians go, oh, yeah, yes, Mr. Israeli Prime Minister, we support you. We support Israel, because that's what Christians are supposed to do. And what angers me about this is a traitor speaking. Because, I mean, is he going to be a... did he convert to Christianity, you know, recently? No, he's a Jew, and I know that at least, I don't know how zealous he is, but at least technically or officially, he is a practicing Judaic Jew. You know, he practices Judaism. Maybe he's not that religious to begin with, but I think that nominally he would say that I practice Judaism. So this practicer of Judaism is thanking the followers of Jesus who claim to be the Messiah, and that the Jews see as a false Messiah. That's why they don't follow him. That's why they rejected him, and that's why, you know, they asked the Romans to kill him, to crucify him. And after crucifying him, they still didn't believe in him for the most part. So they have rejected him as the false Messiah, and they're waiting for their Mashiach, the true Mashiach. Because that other guy from Nazareth, from 2,000 years ago to them, that's a false guy. That's an imposter. So this Jew, follower of Judaism, is coming to say to the Christians, hey, you know, to the followers of the false Mashiach, we thank you for your prayers. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you're a Jew and believe in Judaism, what do you think what power do you think the prayers of Christians really have? They're supposedly praying to a God that sent a false Messiah, an imposter, a liar who pretended to be someone he wasn't, like a traitor. They think of Jesus as a traitor because he was a Jew himself, and he hijacked the title of Messiah and said to the world, "I am the Messiah." And then an antagonism was formed between the rest of the world that started believing in this Messiah and the Jews. And the Jews were persecuted for 1800 years, and to the point that they ended up going through the Holocaust. We all know the story. So you would think, as a follower of Judaism, you are not going to give much credence to the prayers of these people who are following a false Messiah, right? So why is he thanking them for their prayers? Like, see what I'm saying? He's a hypocrite. He's a liar. And this goes to the very thing that we've been saying. The Israelis and the Jews in Israel pretend to like the Christians and say, "Oh, we stand with you," because the Christians all naively stand with them. And there was a point where standing with Israel was a good thing. The line was crossed on the 14th of May, 2018. I've said this before. That's when it stopped being the right thing to do. Because the truth removed the veil. On the 14th of May, 2018, is when the truth said, "I'm sick and tired of you, because you've been put in the valley of decision to decide which side are you on. If you really believe that that you've been wrong all these years about the Messiah, then convert. But if you've not been wrong, then stand up for your principle and tell the rest of the world that they're all fools for believing in a false Messiah, and stop being hypocrites, taking their support, their money, their weapons and their advisors and everything, but at the same time, calling them followers of a false Messiah. Just make up your mind." And we see here the pathetic, shameful seller. This is like a used car salesman coming, and because he needs the money, he needs the support of the Christians. So now he's saying Merry Christmas to the Gentiles, and thanking them for their prayers and their support and all that. So just shows the hypocrisy, and he's a traitor. He's pretending to be with them, but see, Christians and Jews, they look the same from the outside, but you look inside and then they're not the same thing. Like the British and the Irish, it's not the same thing. There's something different about one group versus the other. You can't blend them into one big heterogeneous, melting pot and say, "Oh yeah, they have these common values." And no, because one side is saying the other side is following the false Messiah. You can't have them compatible. And there was a season, as I was saying, where it made sense for the Christians to support Israel. It's as if Israel was in this, looking at it from a Christian perspective, Israel was in a state of blindness and stupidity and naivete. And it was punished for, from the Christian perspective, punished for its unwillingness to follow the true Messiah. And they went through this horrible 6 million Holocaust. And then it's like, okay, now you're given a second chance. The nation of Israel is reborn. And you're given time to heal, to wake up from your stupor, like someone who's been in a coma for 1800 years and is waking up from the coma, and you give them time to wake up from the coma. And then after they are woke, they wake up, and if they are still in their old mindset, then you go, "Hey, I'm not going to support you anymore, because you came out of the coma. You were given 70 years to come out of the coma, and you're still stuck in your old ways. You've been given time to recover and wake up. You are not waking up. I'm not supporting you anymore." And that's I mean, I'm speaking from a Christian's perspective. That's what they should be thinking. But they don't. They are still, you know, blindly supporting, and they don't realize that the, and all these people who are supporting Israel also don't realize that the veil has been removed from America as well. America is no longer a nation with the protection of the truth. This is a third world country now. That's what's getting run over by all these illegal aliens. I think 750,000 illegal aliens have come in since in the last 3 months, if I remember correctly from another story. And around 250,000 have come in December alone. That's 250,000 people coming in through the border. It's just ridiculous. And it's because the truth, there's no protection there's over the country anymore. It's gone. So the same people who don't realize that the veil of protection has been removed from Israel don't realize also that it has been removed from America. So these are naive people. And this is the guy who's selling them a bill of goods. This is Netanyahu saying, Merry Christmas. I, the Jew, who think that you're following the false Messiah, I wish you a happy celebration of his birthday. When it was even hit, not even the day he was born, but as we were saying earlier. But here we go, the traitor. So when you need the Christians, then you are all conciliatory and everything. And then once you have their money, then you turn your back on them and say, whatever, just go away. Let me live my life with my own beliefs and my own way of thinking and doing and seeing things. But next time I need more money, I will come talk to you. You know, don't call us, we'll call you. It's disgusting. That's why Netanyahu is a pig, a worthless, worthless pig. Cursed is he. And cursed are those in Israel who will support him. This is the same guy who betrayed his own people by injecting them, forcing them to take the injection, by forcing these draconian lockdowns on the people of Israel. And the people of Israel still support him? Worthless traitor, son of a bitch. He did his own mini holocaust on his own people by injecting them. And they'll be dying off much more quickly than the rest of the population in the Middle East because of that. Cursed is he. Chameleon, traitor. The other day I said to myself, well, let me see if I can find some information online about how Christians are really treated in Israel. And I did that with an open mind, like, okay, I just want to know the truth. How are Christians treated in Israel? And by the way, I may have mentioned this story before, but one day, many years ago, I was flipping through the channels and I was watching, I was watching TBN. It's a Christian channel. I just wanted to see what they were saying. And the founder of that channel, his name, I think he's dead now, Paul Crouch, I think he's dead. He was talking to someone, and he was saying, because Paul Crouch, this guy was always, when I would flip through the channels and watch him for a while, he would always be talking about, you know, all the stations that he's put up, you know, in all these countries and all that. That was like his obsession. Like he night and day he lived with the idea of, where do I put another antenna or another channel? Where do I start another channel, TBN channel, and so forth around the world? So he wanted to get into the Israeli market to broadcast TBN in Israel. And he was talking about that, and he said something about him trying to get all the permits and all the paperwork to get that done in Israel. And he was saying how the Israelis were always saying, oh yeah, we're gonna help you and yes and so forth, and then he would come back and say, how's it going? And they would, he said, more or less the words he used was, it's like they were always patting me on the back and saying, yes, Mr. Christian Crouch, we're going to help you, and we're going to let you put up a station. You just have to give us more time, and we're working on it. But they never did. It's like, there was a patronizing attitude from the Israelis towards him because he was a Christian, and they were just constantly blocking him. And I don't know if he was ever able to set up his channel in Israel, but that, and this was back in the year 2000, around that time, so it was many years ago. So even then, you could see that is Israeli attitude of just playing to the Christians, you know, like acting like they're playing along and cooperating. But after they get what they want from the Christians, they just send them off. So that's the attitude that I was aware of, and it was shocking to me because I didn't have that perspective. To be frank, I had the more naive perspective about Israel. And I, when I saw that, I said, "Oh wow, these Israelis are peculiar people," because they're pretending to be one thing and then they do another. I'm going to read an article that I found as I was looking for some information on how Christians are really treated in Israel. And I found this website. It's persecution.com. I've never heard of it. And they have an article called Israel, including the West Bank and Gaza. And it says, overview, the decades-long conflict between the Israeli government and Palestinian authorities over the city of Jerusalem, the temple, the land, and the status of Palestinian refugees remains about among the world's most volatile issues. During this conflict, both Jews and Muslims have been coming to faith in Christ. This is a Christian website. Have been coming to faith in Christ despite their religion's instructions to reject Christ as Lord and Savior. Christian activity is routinely opposed by Islamists among the Palestinian Arab populations of the West Bank and Gaza, and occasionally opposed by ultra-Orthodox and other anti-missionary Jews in Israel proper. Despite this opposition, some churches include both Jews who have accepted Christ as the Messiah and Arabs who have left Islam and placed their faith in Jesus. Active ministry efforts among both groups involve Bible distribution, discipleship, evangelism, church planting, and theological education. The Palestinian Authority maintains some control over the West Bank under Israeli federal authority, while the militant Muslim group Hamas controls the Gaza Strip. Both groups are adamantly opposed to Christian activity and indoctrinate their populace to hate the West, Jews, and Christians. So it says here... So they talk about you know, Muslim regions, the persecution, obviously, so not even going to read that. And then it says, in Jewish communities, Jews who follow Christ risk rejection, social pressure, and occasional violence from ultra-Orthodox Jews and organized anti-missionary groups. So, in other words, yeah, the Arabs who convert to Christianity, they are treated like rubbish, and they're persecuted and harassed and physically attacked, you know, very blatantly. With the Christians, the Jews who convert to Christianity, it's not as overt and blatant, but they also get ostracized. It's more subtle. They don't get physically attacked as much or as frequently, but you know, they convert to Christianity. And what it says here, they suffer rejection, social pressure, and occasional violence. And I think I don't know if I read it here or somewhere else that they also have limited job opportunities. So if you're a Jew and you convert to Christianity, your life becomes a little limited, more limited in Israel. And every now and then there are ultra Orthodox Jews have anti missionary groups and they protest in front of churches and every now and then protest in front of Christian churches and sometimes I think they even have even done vandalism and things like that to harass Christians in Israel. But even though but when it comes to tourists, I don't know if I must have read this somewhere else. As I was looking into this, when it comes to Christian tourists, they are treated like kings. I did read that they are treated very well. If you're a Christian, you're a tourist, you go to visit, then don't expect to be, at least by the non-Arab Israelis, don't expect any sort of harassment. They're going to treat you like you're a king and welcome and all that. But if you want to stay, you're a Christian and you want to stay, then the attitude changes. So it's always the same attitude. Yeah. As long as we can get your tourism dollars and your money, then we're going to pretend like we're all one big family. But if you are trying to convert us, then suddenly you're not as welcome as we said you were. So there's a hypocrisy and a betrayal. As I said, from the Christian perspective, it's understandable to see the Israelis act like that for a period. After, you know, the Holocaust, after all that, they were finally given a land. They were given an opportunity to start all over again, like the curse was over. And they had a decompression period of 70 years to kind of wake up and realize, okay, where are we in the world? Is this Mashiach, the real Mashiach, or are we supposed to wait for another? They had 70 years to wait, and then 70 years came and went, and they stayed as hard and stupid as they were before. And I say hard and stupid because whether you agree or disagree with Christianity, either way, they're idiots. Because if you agree with Christianity, then they are idiots for not accepting the real, the true Mashiach. And if you're not if you don't believe in Christianity, then they're idiots because they are acting like they want to play along with the Christians but are only using them. So either way, they're wrong. So that's where they are. And the Christians, the naive Christians in America, don't realize this. They don't see it. Because see, the thing is, from the outside, everything blends in. All the name tags blend in. But when you're inside, if you're a person of conviction who believes, okay, you stand for something or you don't stand for something, then the names become clear, like the distinctions of the names become clear. And then you start seeing, this is a Republican, this is a Rhino, this is a conservative, this is a wannabe conservative, or pretend conservative, and so forth. And you start seeing who is who. Another story I wanted to read. This is from Quora.com. That's the website where people ask questions and people log in to write answers to the questions. Someone asked, how are Christians treated in Israel? So different answers were given, but let me read one, for example. It says, depends, are you Arab or not? Non-Arab Christians, particular tourists, are treated quite well. So this is where I read the thing about tourists. There are issues with harassment in some places, particularly Jerusalem, largely against Israeli Christians rather than tourists. There have also been sporadic incidents of vandalism and even arson against churches. If you're Arab or Palestinian, then quite poorly. In other words, they get treated quite poorly. Recently, and largely outside of the news, many Arab Christian schools in Israel were protesting against the government in Israel over unequal treatment. Christian Arabs face the same racism and discrimination as Muslim Arabs. Those living in the West Bank face the same repression and military rule that other Palestinians face and do not receive any special treatment due to their religion. So he's saying many Arab Christian schools in Israel were protesting against the government in Israel over unequal treatment. So it's like, if you're a Christian, it's like 1 point off of your score in Israel. Okay, you're down a point or two. But if you're a Christian and an Arab, to the Israelis, you get further knocked down. And on top of that, your fellow Arabs are going to treat you like rubbish and treat you pretty badly. So you lose on both ends. And that's the reality. And then someone else wrote, let's see if I can access this. Yeah, it says, Being a Christian in Israel is a mixed bag. I have experienced some very unpleasant incidents, but they're in the minority. Just to get them out of the way, here are a few. And the lady who's writing this is like a nun. She has her avatar, whatever, is like this. She looks like a nun, and it says here, Israeli Catholic, writer, translator, living in the margins. I don't know what that means. So she's a Catholic. It says here, just to get them, being a Christian in Israel is a mixed bag. I have experienced some very unpleasant incidents, but they're in the minority. Just to get them out of the way, here are a few. So she lists a few. One, people spitting on you. This has happened to me a few times, both in the old city and the new city. The time in the new city was the most surprising because it was so unusual. It was a middle-aged Datia or Dacia, and in parentheses she wrote religious. So there's some sort of terminology, Datia or Dacia or whatever. Datia, religious Jewish woman, and we were in the German colony neighborhood of Western Jerusalem, a mixed secular religious neighborhood that was undergoing gentrification at the time. There's a convent of German sisters and a monastery of French nuns at the edges of the neighborhood. This woman followed me for several blocks while making unpleasant remarks in Hebrew and English, which I ignored. Finally, she came up alongside me, said something I didn't catch, and spit on me. I couldn't help myself from sarcastically asking, quote, "Do you feel better now?" Unquote, in Hebrew. It surprised her that I spoke Hebrew. She turned and hurried off. She said, whenever Muslims would spit on me, it was always men, and usually just in passing, or as I passed them in the souk. I don't know what that is, S-U-Q. I didn't engage, just wiped it off as I continued on my way. As I became better known in the souk and learned some Arabic, it pretty much stopped happening. So this lady, this Catholic nun, got spit on by a Jewish woman. And she would get spit on by Muslim men. I mean, imagine that. That's how you get treated as a Christian. And then another example she gave. People accusing you of all the anti-Semitic things that have ever been done by Christians and in the name of Christianity. This is just the same as when some people in Western countries try to hold all Catholics culpable for abuse that has taken place in Catholic institutions and by Catholic clergy. As much as I would like to, I cannot change the past. I cannot undo the atrocities. I listen as supportively and attentively as I can until they finish. Then I tell them how ashamed I am that such things were done in the name of the church I love and the God I serve. I ask what I can do to help them now. And there's so much to say there, but we're going to skip it for now because this audio has run so long. So we're going to skip that, but let's read a little more. Losing a job, that's the third thing she mentions. At the time of my conversion, I was working in a government ministry as one of the minister's translators. The security officer called me in for an interview because he felt I had become a risk. He suggested that I resign. I did. He may have been acting more on his personal anti-Christian feelings than on any policies, as there were Christians and Muslim Arabs working in the ministry, but I didn't feel like making an issue of it. So this thing about losing your job, like, it's subtle, and I read this elsewhere, that Christians tend to have a harder time finding a job in Israel, because they it's like they don't openly tell you, we hate you and go to hell, but they kind of give you the cold shoulder and tell you, like, you're not that welcome. And then days off from work. Positive and negative. Christians who work for Jewish-owned enterprises very often do not receive days off on their religious holidays or on Sunday, which is the first day of the work week here. It's sometimes possible to get the boss to make accommodations, but it usually comes at the expense of annual leave. Christians working in the service industry have it a bit easier since it's illegal to require Jews to work on Shabbat, Saturday, the Jewish Sabbath. People can often just trade with colleagues or have the scheduler give the Christian the weekly day off on Sunday. This can be very cool since in many industries, healthcare for one, people get up to double pay on Shabbat. In the positive aspects, far away the negative. So this lady trying to give the positive spin, you know, the Christian love, kumbaya mindset. You can maybe... she says holy places, churches and denominations, pilgrims and religious tourists, intracommunal dialogue.
Yeah,
who cares? Sorry, lady. You sound like a nice lady, but I think you're being very naive. And her attitude of, you know, when she was getting spat upon. I don't know. We can talk about that all day, but the point is that the Christians who are supporting Israel don't realize that Israel has given is constantly giving them the cold shoulder, but pretending not to. So as a tourist, you're treated like a king, but if you go there as a Christian and try to live out Christianity, you're going to get treated pretty badly. And that's not what I wish Christians in America would understand. And as I said, it was understandable for them to ignore that, because the Jews were coming out of a coma, and they had 70 years to come out of the coma from 1948 to 2018, and they didn't come out of the coma. I'm speaking from the Christian perspective, so you shouldn't be supporting them anymore. Like, go to hell. Go do it on your own, boys. You think that you have the true Mashiach, or that he's coming? Then wait for him. We're not going to help you anymore. See, that's the attitude that you should have if you're consistent with your Christianity. But they're letting them get betrayed. They're getting betrayed. The Christians are getting betrayed by the Israelis. And Netanyahu coming out with a video saying, Merry Christmas, ho, ho, ho. And when he's saying ho, 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 he's calling you a ho. That's what he's doing. And taking advantage of you, using you. And the sad thing is he uses you, and then he doesn't pay you after he's done his thing with you. And that's how the Israelis are. They use Christians as whores. They use them for their pleasure, and then they send them off and don't even give them proper pay. And I say that in quotes, for their services rendered. Christians just go, yeah, take advantage of me, take advantage of me. Rape me, take me for all you want, and I'm going to continue supporting you. And that's why the Israeli women got the hostages and all that, you know, got so severely raped. It was a manifestation of what the Israelis do to the Christian supporters all the time. It is what it is, and it's a nation of traitors now, Israel. They're still better than Hamas. I'm not saying that. Oh, yeah. Then let's support Hamas. Obviously, it's like two levels of traitorship over there. One lower and one higher. One more evil than the other, but they're both in the same pot. It's almost like a reflection, as we've said before, of America and conservatives and liberals. They're both wrong. They're both traitors to the truth. But one is a little better than the other, but it still doesn't justify them. And enough is enough of the half-baked thing, you know, of compromising and always having to choose the least of the two evils, the lesser of two evils. And that's why I say to Israel, you're on your own, boys. You're on your own. Prove to me that your coming Mashiach is going to help you out. Prove to me that you are going to that you are right, and that all those Christians who've been supporting you are idiots and are misguided. Prove it. But stop with the half half-baked thing. Do it. Do it, and I challenge you. Do it. Prove to me that you have the right religion, that you have the right, that you're following the real God, and that the real God is, if He exists, and you say He exists, that He is following, He's supporting you. Prove it. Prove it, you bastards. Prove it. So that's what we wanted to talk about. It all has to do with betrayal. And there are a few more things we wanted to talk about related to betrayal. I don't know why. We wish we could be talking about other stuff, but that's what's been in the atmosphere. So I guess we'll have to continue talking about betrayal in future audio snippets. This one ran way too long. And I hope that that you have, if you've listened to this whole thing, that you are getting something out of this, that you're understanding the nature of betrayal a little better, despite our muddled presentation. But I hope some principles are seeping through somehow. And I appreciate this time, and thank you very much for listening. We'll continue talking about this in a future audio recording. Thank you.